I'm H, and this is Rewind. A personal collection of amazing audio from your favourite national broadcaster over the last few weeks, though some people have liked it for even longer than that. Hardly have a rewind at this time of the year and not hear something from the TT, or Waterworld as it's now known, after Water Sports was rejected on grounds of ambivalence. So we'll have Boydie and Beth, who should really be a crime-fighting duo, and listen to the man with the least enviable job on the planet at this time of the year, Clerk of the Course Gary Thompson, as he clarified the rationale behind one of the most unusual and for some contentious decisions during the TT in living memory. Staying with the TT, the iconic DCAC, that's not AC/DC, finished their musical odyssey with bangs and beard, and Johnny Moss, as he is this time of the year, eschews TT for just bees. But life continues ex-TT, as it were, not TTX, and we also have IM1, rubbish footpaths, disappearing fields, and amazing brushes. Lovely to be back with another Rewind, highlighting the incredible spread and variety of broadcasting to come out of the Black Satanic Mill on the Hill, or Broadcasting House, as it's widely known. It's not all just music you don't like. And of course, the station has been heavily involved in the TT since I was in short pants. Not a useful comparison, really, since I still am, but the mid-1960s in any case, with the likes of the great Peter Neal at the helm watching those fairings glinting in the sunshine. Sadly, Peter and the sunshine are long gone, but we still have people who can give the event a big build-up, the one it needs. Take it away, Chris Boyd. Men's Radio.
For almost 120 years, the motorcycling world has looked to an island in the Irish Sea as its ultimate proving ground. The best road racers on the planet make their annual visit to showcase their skill and knowledge and the performance of their machines against the longest, most strenuous test in world motorsport. The requirements include blazing speed, precision and courage. They race through towns and villages, valleys and a mountain pass from sea level to almost 1,400 feet, threading the needle of sinuous ribbons of asphalt on everyday roads just minutes after the public have been using them. It is an event that consumes an island, visitors taken to the hearts of the locals, with lifetime links and friendships made and renewed. Spectators line hedges, walls and gardens, united by a shared respect for the riders who race against each other and the course itself. Blink and you will miss it. Everyone comes with their own aspirations, and the few who conquer attain a hero status. The roads are closed. Are you ready? Then let's do this. This is the Isle of Man TT 2026.
Chris Boyd, statistician extraordinaire, and no slouch when it comes to the introductory build-up either. Sadly, as we all know, the one thing we can do nothing about at the TT is the weather. And for the third year on the trot, it's been sh**, and generally more conducive to boats than bikes, with TT fans yet again spending more time sheltering in pubs and tents than basking in the sunshine in a favourite vantage spot. And Hollywood stars, unusually having riders which eschewed Winnebagos full of flowers and drugs in favour of countless supplies of umbrellas and free Versace cagoules. But that's hardly surprising at the TT. What was a massive, and not at all welcome surprise, was the cancellation of the entire sidecar class, following a technical review of a bad crash following local crew and current TT champions, the Crowe brothers. You often hear the phrase, you can feel the shock in the air. In this case, when it was announced mid-festival that the remainder of the sidecar racing, a unique and for many favourite part of the TT experience, was being axed for this year, it was undoubtedly true. Clerk of the Course, Gary Thompson, came onto Radio TT to explain why the decision had been taken.
Yeah, we had a... obviously, there was concerns after Wednesday night's incident at Rock Farm, and and I need to stress that wasn't taken as the actual decision to suspend sidecar activity for this year. There's been a number of incidents over the last few years. Obviously, we had similar incident last year at Rencullen, and it's kind of all to do with the aerodynamics, you know, the aerofoils, and you know, we've sometimes not so much in recent years, but in you know years gone by, the race organisers kind of reacted following an incident, and it's been reactive. And what we try to be now is very much proactive. What we've done as part of the safety management system, part of the safety review, we try where we can to mitigate the risks. And obviously, you know, what happens, you know, a sidecar flipping over at that location or anywhere on the course, there is always potential for injury to spectators, competitors, other competitors and officials. So we're not saying that that's it for sidecars. I need to stress that. We're not saying that's it. You know, we are going to have a consultation process after this event's over, speak with the sidecar teams and see what we can do to stabilize sidecars, make them safer, and you know, hopefully for sidecars to continue. But yeah, we tried it this year with the restrictor plates. That's worked in part, but obviously not enough given what happened on Wednesday night.
Yeah, fair to say that the teams will always try to maximize what they've got, so you've restricted the power a little bit, so then aerodynamics become a much bigger feature of what they've tried to do, and the two combined, you don't know until you get here what the effect is going to be.
No, absolutely. I mean, yeah, you can't test on the TT. I mean, you can test elsewhere for the TT course, but when you get to the TT course, that's it. You know, get out on the course, and you've got what you've got. So we've working closely with Dave Molyneux. Obviously, Dave's got years and years of experience, but you know, any near miss, which obviously Wednesday night was, any near miss or incident, we have a post incident review, which includes near misses, and we just want to err on the side of caution. And I know that's tremendously disappointing for the sidecar class. You know, it's disappointing for everybody, but I think had Wednesday night turned out different, you know, there'd be far more questions what they are now.
Were the sidecar competitors involved in this decision, or was it purely an organisational decision from a safety point of view?
It was purely an organiser's decision. Obviously, it's down to me. That ultimately comes down to me. But you know, there are a team of us get together. You know, we discussed it, we reviewed it, and then I got the sidecar teams together yesterday lunchtime and announced them what that decision was before it became public.
And I'm sure you can understand this. Some frustration amongst the sidecar community who do want to be out there racing, but at the same time, I think they all understand the safety implications of what happened.
Absolutely that, and as I say, I can't stress enough. The, you know, I've heard people on, you know, obviously those on social media who post on social media, they're saying that's it, sidecars is finished, and all this sort of stuff. That's not the case. You know, I on behalf of the race organizer, I need to be answerable. I've got to mitigate that risk, and what all we're saying is that's it for 2026. We will review, assess, consult, and reset, and see where we are for 2027.
Clark of the course, Gary Thompson then, a man with a difficult job at the best of times this year, perhaps one of the hardest decisions he's been involved in. But as mentioned, also a man who isn't afraid to be proactive rather than always reactive, which perhaps has been the case for a lot of the TT's history. Of course, we wish all those injured in sidecar incidents a speedy recovery from their injuries and hope we can see the return of the sidecars, also sidelined from Southern 100 racing this year, in 2027. Meanwhile, the wonderful commentary team have been hard at it, painting what pictures they could. Beth Espy.com Motorsport Podcast Limited was quite proactive herself with getting the riders racing.
I think we'll be on a good starting point now, I seriously do.
Yeah, that's what you need, isn't it? You need to have the confidence that actually you've made the right changes and you can just go into tomorrow with your head held high almost.
I'm not racing tomorrow.
Well, then you could go in tomorrow anyway, yeah.
Hard though it is to believe at times, ordinary life does continue on the Isle of Man throughout the months of May and June, regardless of the racing and 40-odd thousand fans over for the event. A record attendance this year, as it has been every year for at least the last two decades, it seems, albeit the numbers don't actually seem to change that much. John Moss, who, like Clark Kent, changes into the super being who is Johnny Moss during TT Fortnite, dropped his TT cape and goggles for a time and donned a space suit. Well, a beekeeper's outfit. to come up with a little gem on the rather important island bee population and the threats that could be facing it.
Harry Owens, we haven't spoken for a while. Yeah. Can I start off by asking you about the big threat last year, which was the Asian hornet? How are we faring with that?
Well, at the moment, because we're girding our loins to deal with it, we decided to get some new lures or traps to see if there was a hornet. We would find them in these particular specially made traps for the job, but they haven't really got to any extent up through England yet. That's one good thing. I mean, they found an odd one in Ireland, Southern Ireland and what have you, but that could be one that's got on something and been transported over, and just an ordinary hornet, not a queen. One of the dangers is the queens, they're the ones that, if they come over, then
they set
procreate.
Up colonies, presumably, set up hives, they start proliferating.
Right. Yeah. Just like a wasp, they'll create a colony, and then as at the end of their breeding time, they'll produce queens, and they can produce over 100 queens or more than that within a hive. And those queens will eventually hibernate when the weather gets really bad. Out of that, you can get about 5%, but if you think about 5% of 100, they then go out and do the same thing the following year, and so it gets worse and worse and worse.
We've got a meeting here of the bee keepers,
yes.
Various keepers,
yep.
Down here. Just tell us, how has the bee harvest gone in this last year, in the last 12 months?
Well, last year and the year before was pretty grim. We had some lousy summers. It didn't work in with the plants that were secreting and the bees that could go out and get to it. So basically last year, the summer was so bad that the fruit on the brambles was there, and the bees then got the fine weather and there was nothing for them to collect. So it was a bit of a disaster. The honey crop was pretty grim. But this year, the spring is giving us a bit of boost. Let's hope it'll continue and we'll be able to catch up.
Johnny Moss, literally buzzing with enthusiasm there, and rapidly turning himself into a video superstar in its dotage. You can see his video report with Harry on the Manx Radio website, manxradio.com, and click on the Videos tab, curiously enough. From TT and Bees to AC/DC, or DC/AC to be exact, the venerable Rockers went out with a bang this TT Festival, a marathon final ever gig at the Villa Marina, hanging up their satchels and shorts after decades rocking fans on the Isle of Man and around the world via their sizeable support fan base as one of the best tribute acts out there. Along with the fans, plenty of merch along the way, including some special DC/AC beers, as Christy De Haven found out when the lads crowded into her live lounge along with a sizeable amp rig and huge double bass drum kit.
Tell me about this beer.
This is this is our second DC/AC brew. We did one last year. And when we were doing the final one, Ken Collister in Laxey, who's he's one of the main people at the Laxey Institute, and he has a brewery in his garage.
As you do.
Brew shed. And when I tasted his lager, I couldn't believe how nice it was.
Well, genuinely, it's good.
Lovely.
So did you have a hand in the flavours of this DC/AC one then, and the previous one?
We just left it to him.
Does it taste like rock?
Yeah. All bits in it.
Shame and regret.
Sweat, shame, regret, yeah. And a bit of fire thrown in. It's spicy. It's a spicy little drink. So that's going to be available, is it, on the day?
Yeah, they're stocking it for the day. And so it'll be available. I don't know how much it is, but
this is so exciting.
It's a nice touch.
Well, this is the thing.
Nice,
I mean, hey, this is kind of cool, is it? Because it really does just show how big you have become over the years.
Just when he said that, this is our second brew we're doing now. It's like some kind of franchise we're working on. Do you know what I mean? We're licensing out the logo that isn't ours, by the way. Sorry.
Well, speaking of that, I should say, mentioned at the top of the show, you're all wearing different T-shirts. Okay. Yeah. So, Dick, tell us a bit about the T-shirt that you're wearing.
Well, I can't remember the exact year of this, but it was on Docker's 40th birthday, I think.
80 years ago.
It says the 1st of March on it.
Yeah.
Saturday the 1st of March.
2008. 2008 it was,
right,
I believe.
Yeah. So it's a bit of a vintage one.
That's cool. And I can't, we won't be able to hear Dockers on the microphone there, but just describe Dockers T-shirt for us.
Dockers T-shirt. He's got the 2024 vintage.
The high voltage. High voltage one.
That's a good one. I've got Let There Be Rock 2025.
Yeah.
The hoodie.
And Johnny has got the T-shirt from this gig, the Final Stand.
And will you be able to get those at the gig? Yeah.
We've got a couple of retro ones left, or it's pretty much all the.
It's almost all the new ones. That's all that we've got now. Yeah. But they'll be available at the merch stand with our. The normal big logo that we've got.
And the Welcome Centre, when we did the release for the tickets, we pretty much gave away all of our retro T-shirts. Aww. Everything, mugs, yeah. T-shirts, picks. It was just so nice.
There's not many tribute bands over here that have their own merchandise in that respect.
The beer was really another step.
taking over
Motorola for the day. That was really appreciated. Yeah. You know, Adrian Christian, who runs the place, has been very kind, and Emma that also works in there. Yeah. She's coordinating with Dick to get everything happening on the day. So we're just really grateful to that. And it's just when people come into Douglas, it just, every time we come down to walk down at the town to go to the gig, there's always like, you know, pubs like Sam Webb's or Quid's and others. And it's great. And just to have the Motor Isle, it's a branded pub for the day, a kind of DCAC branded pub for the day.
That's so cool.
We just thought it was a really cool thing to do.
I mean, why not? We should rename the Isle of Man in some way, shouldn't we?
Dockers Isle.
The Dockers Isle. So it is, obviously, it's June the 2nd, isn't it? Let's make sure I've got that right.
Yeah, Tuesday, June the 2nd.
I did think it was sold out, but there's a few tickets left. So if you're very, very lucky, get there quickly. Yeah. Get your tickets as quickly as you can, because honestly, this is going to go now that the visitors are all coming over.
A lot of people walk in. We find a lot of the sales, a lot of people walk in who visitors have come over, and they walk into the villa during the week, during TT week or practice week. And a lot of the tickets just go then.
Yeah.
So there's not many left. So they're going to go.
Get on it. Yeah. Well, listen, we're going to have something live shortly. So don't go away. And as I said, if you've got any questions or any memories of going to see them, I'd love to hear from you. 166177 or email studio@manxradio.com. So what are you going to play for us, Aid?
So we're going to play traditionally the first track of an AC/DC concert. Well, it used to be anyway. It's Livewire.
Amazing. Okay, right. I'm going to lift all the microphones here and it'll be absolutely fine. Go for it, guys. Take it away.
The thirst that I've got, the booze. Give you an inch, I'll I'll take you a mile. We wish them well in their retirement, where hopefully they can enjoy a glass or two of their brew, if there's any left, which there probably isn't. Yeah, I'm a live wire. I'm a live wire. Holy smoke and sweet desire. You can catch them on the Live Lounge podcast and the Live Lounge live every Saturday at 5 p.m, though sometimes with Siobhan Fletcher if Christy's still in bed. One man who spends very little time in bed is Thomas Cleeter. He runs a sheep farm single-handedly on the Isle of Man. He has done so for the past 4 years. Amy Griffiths from Max Radio's newsroom spent a day with him around his farm, which, as she found out, is shrinking year on year due to coastal erosion. Once a well-aired topic on the Isle of Man on almost a weekly basis, now still very present, but it seemed rarely spoken of.
We lost the fence down there, and then last time I come up and I saw this and I went, it's not good. So it's like, it's lost another big chunk. I wouldn't want to do anything with this field. So it's like, this is probably one of our driest fields, and we would normally put like bales along places to add shelter because it's so exposed here. But if you add bales, because it's so dry, really good runoff, it was really useful and handy to just have that area as a ewes and lambs area with bales as shelter. Since we've lost this, I don't really want to use this field anymore. It's not exactly safe because we run on electric. This is one of our only areas that we had pig wired, and I wouldn't trust sheep to break through the other side of the electric and climb down the cliff face and then get a phone call from the police to say that there's sheep on the beach. Genuinely my worst nightmare, because there's no chance you'll get a hold of them if they're on the beach.
It's a long old beach as well, isn't it?
Yeah, it goes on for quite a while. Either way they go, yeah. You know, if you get them to split, yeah, you've kind of got to just take a decision on who you're going to save and who's going to be allowed to run the beach and the countryside then for the next 6 months, because you're never going to find them again once they've sprinted away from you. So it's... yeah, it's not the greatest spot. I mean, even if you hop out and have a look at it, it's...
yeah. Ooh. I mean, it's such a beautiful spot, though. I mean, especially
really
on a day like today.
Yeah, it's gorgeous here, right here. One of my favourite spots is you just come in the summer and just sit and chill. But,
you can see
how green it is at the bottom still as well, because that's how much has been taken out and it's not going to stop.
And you can see the fence here. I mean, there's a gap between the land here and the fence of, what's that, about 4 feet probably?
Yeah. As it was getting closer, I was trying to take the fence down so that we didn't have this happen. But this chunk, there was about 2 or 3 metres on the other side of it last time I was up here seeing it, and it's just wiped out in one hit. And I'm like, I'm not even going to try and recover that fence now, because that's too far gone. And then it takes a real good underbite underneath, so it's literally just a bit of grass that's holding that bit together. So as you're walking, you don't know how far you can actually go before you're gonna go down with it, because it's not gonna take 80-90 kilo weight of me walking along it to get as close as I can to that fence.
And that's the thing, we're stood quite near to it now and I'm going, oh god, like, you know, because yeah. It's genuinely that precarious, isn't it?
Oh yeah, it's not nice. If you're scared of heights, it's not a place where you want to be. Like,
it's a big drop.
It's a really big drop.
So you've been farming here for, was it 4 years, did you say?
I've been farming on this farm entirely for 4 years, but I've worked this farm for about, with my father, cool, you're coming up to around 20 odd years now.
Oh,
I think.
Wow.
So it was like, my father put this fence up, and he put it up and he brought it back in about a good 20 odd metres from where it was, and you know, just to be like, oh, you were well covered for it. I don't think we thought it was going to lose like a metre a year kind of thing. On average now. It's definitely speeded up. Like, it was quite settled for quite a long time, and now it's like it's gone into overdrive, really. Like, it's going very quickly.
Is there any idea of what's caused it to speed up?
I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I can say, like, I'm not a meteorologist, but every time we have a storm, we lose a bit. So I'm putting two and two together in that sense, that there's more savage storms we're having are starting to take more chunks out of it, because there's bigger waves, and because all of this is just sand, there's no actual bedrock or anything underneath it, so it's just really easy for it to take out and take down.
As Thomas is no doubt well aware, footpaths around the Isle of Man and its coastline are seen and certainly advertised as a major part of the island's attractions. There are some lovely paths, and you no doubt have a favourite, but sadly it seems they're not all as well maintained as they could be. A recent visitor to the islands came to walk one of the most famous long-distance paths, the Radnofolian, and told Amy Griffiths, who spends a huge amount of her time out in the Manx countryside, that he wasn't impressed with the state of the route.
My name is Bob Jones. I come from Suffolk in England, and I'm here to walk the Radnofolian.
And was that the sole reason that you came here?
It was. I've been to the island twice before and was determined to try and walk the whole thing.
How much of it have you done so far? Where are you up to?
Well, I've done day 6, so I'm about 80 miles. I think I've done about 80 miles. Started in Douglas because I came over on the ferry. I walked to Laxey first night. I camped at Laxey, and then I walked to Ramsey, camped at Ramsey. And then I walked from Ramsey on the dreaded beach, it's a nightmare, all the way up to the Point of Ayre and down the other side. It's the Ayres Nature Reserve there, so I was able to walk on nice grassy paths. But then you soon have to come off again and back on the beach. And I think I did about 16 miles in total on the beach, and that really is a killer. It's a shame that they can't find an alternative route. I realise in some places it's just impossible, but I'm sure there are other places where it might be possible to avoid that beach, because I think it would put people off.
The path itself, how has that been, and the quality of it? Has it been well maintained when you've been walking around?
I was surprised how little used it appears to be. Even in Douglas, I walked along the promenade in Douglas, and then you go up the hill, and the route takes you round the front of the houses on the sort of headland there, and it was completely overgrown. I don't think anybody had walked it this year. I think other people avoid it and just walk along the road. But the official path goes round the front of these people's back gardens, and it was brambles and nettles, and I was having trouble getting through it. There were lots of other problems, I think, with the walk, and it's mainly down to signage. There are places where an essential sign is missing. I say essential because it is a turn, and you have to turn at a certain point, and the sign is gone. No sign of the sign. There's many other places where the sign is damaged, or one of the arrows is broken off. There's signs that have fallen down, signs that are pointing in the wrong direction. Fortunately, I had my alternate survey mapping on my phone, but not everybody has got that. And I feel sorry for people who are simply using the signage, because it is not good. It strikes me that nobody has bothered to go out and survey the signage. Surely, if it's something that they want to promote as an attraction for the island and to get people over here to walk it, then surely they ought to be checking it out and making sure it's up to date.
What message do you think it sends to people if it isn't very well maintained?
Well, it doesn't look very good on the island, does it? The island is letting itself down by promoting something that isn't very good at the moment. It's disappointing for us all, I think, and you come here on the basis that you're going to do a fantastic 100-mile walk, which I was really looking forward to. I've reached the age of 80, and it was a big personal challenge to try and do 100 miles at 80. I'm going to finish it, but it's not easy.
I appreciate you might not want to come back and do the full 100 miles again, but this experience, how would that impact you deciding whether or not to come back again and do another walking holiday here?
Well, I love the Isle of Man. It's a lovely place to come. I won't do that walk again. I might do a shorter walk, maybe. There are other little routes across the island that don't involve going on the beach.
Bob Jones, going strong at 80 and in somewhat better condition than the paths he was walking on. In response, we heard that, as ever, limited resources available, limited manpower, and whilst maintenance is carried out, there are indeed areas which still need attention. Standard stuff. But really, we seem to have endless budgets within government for lots of mid-management and consultancy roles, but never enough to pay people to actually do something directly tangible. Surely some mistake. A Paths Buddies scheme? Guerrilla path maintenance? Discuss. There's also been a wonderful show at the Peel Centenary Centre recently, IM1 Live Voting for Dummies. I don't know who was behind it, but it was absolutely first class. A sellout. Raised almost £2,500 for charity and recorded for future broadcast, I'm told.
Manx Radio News. Yes, I know, what's the point? We missed some of the important bits and make up others. And don't forget, if you've missed this news, you can get exactly the same news online on YouTube, on TikTok, Insta, Snapchat and Discord, but not on X, because we all know that's shit. Even the teens. Or just wait another hour. It will be exactly the same news then, unless someone has driven off the mountain. I'm Rhianne Evans-Sake. The Isle of Man government has held an emergency meeting to discuss the ongoing war in the Middle East. Will someone turn off that music, please? Otherwise, we're going to go over our quota. In a rare move, Chief Minister Alfred Cannon Fodder called a meeting of the Council of Ministers Directorate of Militia, or COMDOM. The Chief Minister said ministers were very aware of the comments being made by President Trumpton regarding the lack of support for his unhinged actions, albeit they were disappointed he hadn't mentioned the Isle of Man by name, as clearly we are just as shit as the UK when it comes to navies. With that in mind, whilst condemning the war in the Middle East, COMDOM passed a resolution to send help to keep the Strait of Hormuz open in what they said is a concerted effort to help motorists and taxi drivers on the island. The Barul will set sail next Wednesday equipped with what the government called the Advanced Manx Mine Removal System, or AMMRS, though others, particularly members of the Manx Fish Producers Association, say that's bollocks. They're just old trawling nets.
Peel Town Commissioners has rejected claims that its latest meeting turned into an all-out brawl. Emergency services were called out to the town hall last night to reports of screaming, shouting and breaking glass. But speaking from a corridor outside of Noble's Hospital's emergency department, the clerk of the authority says the minutes from the meeting show, in fact, they all had a lovely time and even had cake.
Wonderful stuff. Whoever did that was clearly fantastically talented and modest. IM1, Voting for Dummies, will be broadcast in selected highlights form and without the swearing on Tymwald Day. So I'm told. That's about it, I reckon. Thanks for listening. Don't forget Manx Radio, MR Gold and manxradio.com online are there for your delectation 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, with little gems like these liberally sprinkled round. All you have to do is listen. I'll leave you with BethSB.com Motorsport Podcast Limited on air in 1-3, not with Christy but B, asking punters about the oldest object they still used in their homes. I'm suitably amazed at Chris's brush.
Chris in Port Erin, this is possibly the most fascinating thing I've heard. I have an original yard brush that belonged to my grandpa. It's only had 4 new handles and 3 new heads. Amazing. See, things were built to last. They're just not nowadays, are they?
I have a feeling that brush could go on forever with more suitable replacements. Cheerio.